Welcome to Formidable Fun Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. We're happy to talk tomatoes first and foremost.
With you.
Because we're in that blessed season.
Mm-hmm.
We're live. You can reach us 410-662-8780. If you have tomato recipes, tomato gardening tips, tomato stories, tomato disasters.
Ooh. Gardening tips. Mine used to split, or, well, then there was that animal who would take bites out of each one and then
that animal
leave it.
That will not be named?
Yeah, that they would leave it on the vine or drop it on the ground and take one gigantic bite. I'm like, dude, why do you have to take a bite out of all of my tomatoes? Can't you leave some for me?
It's the evil groundhog.
And then that groundhog would go to his, what we called the condominium. Bobby and I used to watch him. Bobby ran my farm for me, and one of the horse jumps was where that guy lived, and it was not too far from the
in
garden.
In the condominium?
Yeah, his horse jump condominium. It was a huge,
what sort of
huge
fees did
groundhog.
You charge him?
He was huge. Unfortunately, the fees were all of my tomatoes. I should have charged him thousands of dollars. But anyway.
Then
I had somebody say they would remove him for me, but unfortunately, I removed myself from the farm instead of him.
And you can email us at foremanwolf@wypr.org.
He's like, that's enough of that.
If you have any other charming tomato groundhog connection stories. So, what is your favorite tomato salad of all time? To eat.
Extremely good extra virgin olive oil, one that is fruity and pretty. Nicely, freshly snipped basil. A warm medallion of goat cheese. So a slice of goat cheese. Right now we're using Vermont Creamery, and I just absolutely love it. I dip the slice of goat cheese in a little bit of just barely warm butter and pretty fine breadcrumb. We use panko. We may even grind it up a little bit. And then that goes into the oven, warmed up, and goes on top of the salad. And I really like arugula with tomatoes, but honestly, any lettuce is good. But I'm just an arugula fan. And that's all I need, salt and pepper. That's my favorite tomato salad.
I am so hurt.
Why?
Because I know I've seen you get excited about a tomato salad that I always make with watermelon and heirloom tomatoes and fresh mint and fresh basil and extra virgin olive oil.
And are there pieces of bread in there?
No, there are no pieces of bread.
Oh,
in there.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Oh, you don't even remember?
No, I don't. Sorry, Tony.
Oh, then you were lying when you said how much you liked it.
Well, let's see now. How many years ago was that? Like 10, 15, 20, 25? Yeah, all right.
Who
well,
knows? You can let us know.
But that is fun, though, Tony, in all seriousness. Watermelon,
the sweetness
and tomatoes
of the,
are
the sweetness
so,
of the watermelon
so
and the acid
together.
Of the tomato.
Yeah, and I have a and we're getting watermelon, so why you know, that's the beauty of it, too, is that
the basil and mint are fantastic together. You cut them in chiffonade together.
Right.
You know, the mint, you have to kind of like slap that mint. You can't just...
What?
Yes.
Was it bad, the mint?
No, there's a thicker membrane on the mint. You have to,
you
if you actually want to get the oil
could
out of it.
Could you chop it or snip it with scissors?
You can, but you All get right. a better result. All Come right. on.
You're talking about crushing, I think, but maybe
no,
a better word
not
to
crushing.
Use. Oh, but that salad...
Cruel.
Okay, well, you are responsible for that salad that I like with the bread, so why don't you say that one?
You're talking about a panzanella?
Yes. So what's in that? Big cubes of
panzanella is necessarily
day old bread.
Yeah, panzanella is necessarily made with day old bread.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially you marinate tomatoes and usually olives. Maybe they're strong olives like oil cured Calabrian olives or something like that.
Yum.
And maybe capers, raw red onion, all that. So you basically make a marinade of all that business, toss your breadcrumb in there a little bit ahead, and then dress the tomatoes with salt, pepper, and all of that. And yeah, that can be
I
fantastic.
Love that salad. But and everything's kind of big, and you just said breadcrumb, and I think you meant like squares of bread.
Yeah, big. When yeah. I say, yeah, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, they're just
but yeah,
sort the,
everything's
of
kind of
cubes.
Cut big, yeah, like a large dice.
Like fingertips.
It's kind of, yeah
it's a little
it's
country.
Fun,
it's meant to be a little country.
Rustic, yeah, I like that. That's a good summertime on the porch salad. But, you know, and talking about tomatoes, And as you said, we are live, so please call and talk to us because we want to hear from you. But I make tomato sorbet too now, and I think it's so much fun to have something like that. If you're having a piece of fish and you want to have a savory something cold with your fish, or you're having scallop ceviche and you want to have maybe an ice on the side or granite, whatever you want to call it, you can go either direction. So I think with the ice, what would be fun is to actually put a little bit of some saffron in, lime juice, the tomato puree and strain the tomato, and a little bit of salt and pepper, and a little bit of Tabasco. And you can just lay that out. Yes.
I'm going to back you up and ask you about the steps of making an ice to serve on the side of, let's say,
ceviche or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Let me let listeners also know you can reach us if you're mobile on your mobile device on Instagram at Charleston Restaurant is the address. And we've gotten questions, and you're welcome to email us, foremanwolf@wipr.org. And, okay, so back it up. So you would serve an ice alongside of what?
Scallop ceviche.
Okay.
So I would puree the tomatoes in the blender, preferably one that does a really good job of annihilating them and really pureeing them very, very well. Mm. I'd add a little bit of Tabasco, salt and pepper, a little bit of fresh lime juice, and you could add saffron if you like saffron. If not, don't.
And saffron, those are just the threads, or
just the threads?
Okay,
right. It could even steep the saffron can steep in the lime juice, and I would actually add a tiny bit of extra virgin olive oil to that. I think that would be really great, and it will emulsify in as you puree it, and then you can just lay it out into a shallow, longer pan. We call them third pans, half hotel pans, and lay it out and lay it in your freezer. And then you just scrape it. Once it's solid, then you just scrape it, and that's an ice. You could also spin it. If you have an ice cream machine, you could spin it, and it'll probably be, because there's no sugar, you're probably going to have, again, sort of an ice or a granita sort of texture.
Granita is what the Italians call that.
Right. And that will be, you know, you may have to scrape that a little bit too, but either way, it's just as easy to just pop it in your freezer. But yeah, long, low pan. That way you can scrape it easily, and then just have it on the side. You know, maybe use some, you know, if you have some champagne coupes that maybe you found somewhere, that's a fun thing to put something like that in and dress up the table, or, you know, in some little pretty glass bowl that you have, and serve it with a ceviche. And when I make ceviche, I like to have jalapeno, cilantro, red onion, and lime, and salt. And again, from there, you can, I think we talked about that not too recently. Yeah, pretty recently. But so then, just as a reminder, you know, it's a good way to make ceviche. And obviously, you marinate the scallops until you feel that they're just marinated long enough. And then, then you dress them, you know, drop off that lime and dress them with the other things.
It's fun. I'm sort of imagining a couple of tuna slices, almost like ceviche, sort of like sashimi, dressed and laid out on top of the ice and the champagne coupe.
That would be really good.
As being potentially a good treat.
Right. Or you could even, or you can chop it and make tartare. That would be fun too. You know, either slices or tartare. But what are some of your favorite things to do with tomatoes right now? Besides
the watermelon, the salad with the watermelons that you clearly don't care about.
Oh my gosh.
That's very hurtful. and soup, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like mixing green tomatoes with really like ripe heirlooms, things that have like really deep sweet flavor, with something that's going to be tart. I think that can be great fun.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's a relish that you make for a grilled fish from those two things mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, tomatoes and corn are great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a tomato and corn relish,
or salad. That would be fun. You know, that's another thing we could talk about is just very quickly how to make fried green tomatoes, which a green tomato is an unripe red tomato. And you want to slice it. You want, I can never say how thick, but you don't want it to be a thin slice, and you don't want it to be super thick either.
About as thick as a number two pencil.
Okay. And then so wash the tomato, slice it, and then it goes into cornmeal with just a little bit of cayenne pepper in. And you can, if you have a deep fryer at home, go ahead and deep fry them. If not, just gently fry them on the stove, and you can use peanut oil or canola oil or corn oil, anything that's a neutral oil. And when they come out and once they start to turn golden and crispy, just a little salt, and wait a minute before you eat it, because they're hot as the devil.
Let it steam out a little bit.
Yeah.
There's so
many things you can do with green tomatoes.
That's the best landing place for Eggs Benedict in the world.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Is a fried green tomato.
Well, and you can skip the bread.
You make some of that relish with the corn and the tomatoes for your Benedict.
And you could throw some crab meat in there, too. Tomato. What?
Nothing.
What?
It's going like one giant stack of stuff.
Corn, relish, crab, and green tomatoes. Or red tomatoes.
Let's talk to Nate, who is safely in his car.
Hi, Nate.
Hey, I am safely in my car. Oh, my God, today. My favorite show on NPR.
Thank you.
You're very sweet.
Tomatoes, yeah. So I'm having 80 people for my husband's birthday, 70th birthday today. And I made
a watermelon gazpacho,
which I've never made before. Mm-hmm. But I made it with melon and mint, and I used fresh tomatoes. I had purchased some canned tomatoes just in case, but honestly, the fresh tomatoes right now, especially
the subject
of your show today, are so incredible. And so I just wanted to mention that. I'm going to serve it in shot glasses. Start the past.
Great.
Everything's past today, so it'll be like the cold starter for everyone to have.
That's amazing. Good for you.
That's great. That's great fun.
I think that's fantastic that you're cooking for 80 people. Good for you. You're a brave man.
I've been cooking for 4 days.
I bet you have.
What you do every day.
Good for you, Nate. I'm sure he's going to be very thankful for that birthday.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Thanks, Nate.
That's cool.
That's fun. That just makes me want to like spicy pickled shrimp and put them on top of that gazpacho.
Mm. Should I just do gazpacho really fast?
No.
All right. Okay.
No, I'm just that we could plug podcast of our program where you did.
All right. Sure.
You did do a gazpacho recipe for a listener last time.
I did.
Anticipating tomato season, but. I mean, we're talking about today because we're really thankful for how strong the season is.
Well, and the tomatoes are just, it's so exciting. This whole growing season has been amazing. And, you know, I think another thing that, you were talking about shrimp. If you're working with seafood, tomatoes are so good for seafood because of the acid level. Because I often think, we all often think of lobster or shrimp or fish with a little bit of fresh lemon or lime juice. So it's so nice to have tomatoes with seafood. You could also make a very simple tomato sauce, a cold tomato sauce, maybe for a piece of fish, or, maybe you wanted to poach some salmon and serve it cold. We were talking about, tuna being served raw, or, anything you want to do. If you want to make a little bit of a cold sauce, what I like to do is I grow my tomatoes very quickly so that they don't char too much, but that they get some flavor from the grill, and then puree it in the blender with really good extra virgin olive oil, again, lime juice, salt and pepper. And it just, if you emulsify in the right amount of oil, it just makes a really, really, it's more like a vinaigrette, really, but a cold sauce that would be very, very pretty for any of those things that I was just talking about.
No skins?
You can leave the skins on and puree them, sure. Or you'll probably lose some of the skins to the grill, which is actually kind of good.
It's funny, there are definitely different varieties of tomatoes that have much thicker or thinner skins, and that's really probably the thing that you want to pay attention to.
Like Roma tomatoes have crazy thick skins.
Yeah, and there's some tiny cherries or grapes that have thick skins, and there are some that they're very, very thin. Usually the lighter the color in tomato, the thinner the skin, but not always.
Mm-hmm. What tomatoes are you seeing today, right now in the market?
I mean, the mortgage lifters have started coming, which are red heirloom tomato that have... always have a little bit of a green yellow top and shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Those are marvelous flavor and really maybe the best balance of all of them. Pink Brandywines,
which are
a classic and have really deep flavor. I saw a few Amana Orange, which might be the sweetest of the whole lot.
Okay,
they're nice to use if you want them for a spicy application or something. I've not seen any the sauce tomatoes I covet, the linguiças or the San Marzanos. any of those guys. Those are the ones with the best skins for frying, honestly. Mm-hmm. That's the best little snack in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The fried tomato skins.
Yeah,
if you're making a sauce, you can make a great little treat with the skins, just deep fried for just a couple of seconds.
Yeah,
and sprinkle with salt, let them dry.
It's like eating candy almost. It's so good. I love them.
Well, and just marvelous to have as a garnish.
And they're beautiful. Yeah, I love the translucency of the tomato. It's so pretty.
So you can get us with your tomato recipes, tomato questions, tomato stories, or anything else connected. Any of the produce of the season, watermelon, corn. We haven't gotten into corn, really.
Mm-hmm.
You can reach us 410-662-8780. Or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And we'll be back shortly. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And it's tomato time.
It is.
After the last 2 years, pretty disastrous seasons, we have a really blessed one so far this year, and we're psyched about it.
Definitely.
What is your all-time favorite heirloom tomato?
The German Striper. I love that tomato. First of all, obviously, I love the way they taste.
Is it because it's German?
No. And I love the colors. When every single time, it's like cutting into a truffle, every single time you cut into one of these tomatoes, all the colors inside, the reds and the yellows and the oranges to white and green, it's just so beautiful. And they seem to always have the perfect texture. What you look for is something that's not mealy. And that's, and we should talk about the fact that you do not want to refrigerate your tomatoes. You have to leave them out. And so you don't want to hurt the texture of the tomato, but gosh, they're just so beautiful and juicy, and I love the flavor. And, when I was little, I didn't realize that tomatoes were fruit. And I think when you eat a tomato like a German Striper or any of the heirlooms, when they're ripe and fresh, that just you realize when you eat one, if you close your eyes, you know it's a piece of fruit. It just tastes like fruit. So I love those things.
Yeah, my first awareness of tomatoes, my great-grandmother was a great cook, but she would buy those tomatoes that you would get in the grocery store in the little packages. She didn't buy them at market. I don't understand why. They would come in the little plastic packages, and there were three of them. And they're obviously, grown in a cave. And there was sort of like a washed-out pink-gray color.
Oh, God.
And they were,
sad.
They were like eating the cables running from this microphone. It was a disturbing thing. So getting first really good tomatoes, I don't know that I did until I started going to market for one of the places I was cooking in Philadelphia in the late 80s. And I would go to the Reading Terminal Market.
Okay.
And I saw these tomatoes. And I'm like, what in the hell is that?
Mm.
They're all different colors and sizes and shapes. And and I bought a bunch of them, and I just kind of like left them on the shelf for a day, and I looked at them.
Sure.
It's like, this is a thing of beauty. So weird and cool. And they smelled a lot. And those things in the little plastic, the little pink-gray things didn't smell like anything except for the plastic that they were in. So I was late
That's
to them.
It's like a revelation.
I felt really obviously spiritual about it.
When I was a little girl, the first time I remember having tomatoes, we were living in North Carolina, and the lady across the street was from North Carolina, and this is obviously the way she grew up eating tomatoes. She would put sugar on them, and I just did not like them at all. And I remember we had a plate of tomatoes, and I was taught that if you went over, at home or at anyone else's house, you ate everything that was put in front of you. And honestly, it was really hard for me to eat those tomatoes with the sugar on it.
People did that here. Which I understand because they were the pink gray things, and so they were.
They were the pink gray things.
And Anyway.
So thank goodness we've moved past that into the world of beautiful tomatoes.
So I've got an interesting email here from Rachel Hickenbotham. One of my favorite summer dishes is a tomato and goat cheese tart. I use a basic savory tart crust, gluten-free for me because I have celiac disease. Mm-hmm. And after it's baked, I spread the bottom with a grainy Dijon mustard. I slice up an overripe tomato, or a few, bought for a dollar at the farmer's market, cover the bottom of the tart with them. I lay fresh basil leaves on top, and then sprinkle fresh chèvre, also from the market, over everything. I bake it until tomatoes are tender, then sprinkle with more basil, olive oil, and coarse pepper. It's very French and very tasty.
Mm, sounds good.
For fried green tomatoes, she says, I make a breading with duca, which turns out crisp and golden, very Mediterranean. I love it with goat cheese and hot sauce.
Good.
Sounds
good. Good solutions, too.
Cooking with care.
Right. So I used to make a terrine, Tony, and now I'm going to have to make it this week, especially since now we're really getting
tomatoes. Oh, you're talking about the tuna.
That thing was so good. And I think I saw that. You remember the show Great Chefs? That was one of my favorite shows ever of all time. I always forget about that. Like you asked me recently, what was my favorite? Great Chefs, you learn so much when you watch that show. And you got to see the chefs work in their kitchen. So you also got to see yet another professional kitchen, which was super cool. And the chef took a terrine mold and laid in the first layer. You have to line it with parchment paper. So I usually just oil down the terrine mold, lay in parchment paper, and then oil it again. And so then the first layer.
A terrine mold that looks sort of like a big loaf pan, mm-hmm. but made of...
They're ceramic. Yeah. They're cast iron.
Cast iron.
Coated with ceramic. Yeah. Right. And then you slice tuna, again, probably about your pencil width thick, maybe a little thicker than that. And I would do the first layer I would do is basil. So you lay in the first layer are basil leaves. And then you lay tuna down and you salt it and pepper it and a little bit of olive oil, good extra virgin olive oil. Then a layer of sliced tomatoes. You want the tomatoes and the tuna to be the same thickness and then another layer of basil and you just go all the way up to the top. And then you pull the parchment paper over it and you have to weigh it down. So what we usually do is we take a piece of cardboard, cut it to fit the top of the terrine, wrap it in foil and sit it on and then weigh it down with something.
You sit on it or something.
Yeah, then we, no. What we do is we put palmy tomato containers because they happen to be the perfect size.
Yeah. And you can put bricks on there.
But that might be a little heavy. So that's the thing. You can't go too heavy.
You don't want to crush the fish.
Yeah, we don't want to hurt the fish. So you want it to be heavy, but not heavy enough that it might actually break up the tomatoes or the fish. And then leave it in the refrigerator for 24 hours. Or hopefully you could even serve it. If you did it like in the morning, say at 9 o'clock and you wanted to serve it, you might have pressed it down long enough and then you pull it out and then you can slice it. And oh my gosh, it's when the lady was talking about the goat cheese. It made me think of it.
Super cute.
Oh, I used to make a vinaigrette. I would puree the goat cheese in the food processor with a little bit of sherry vinegar, 50-year-old age sherry vinegar, salt and pepper, and a little bit of extra virgin olive oil. Oh my gosh. And it would be loose. And so that would be the dressing and then serve it with frisée. Oh, I'm making that. It's so good. You should try. That's easy. Anybody can make that at home. If you have great tuna and great tomatoes and great oil and salt and pepper, you can make this. And it's beautiful. And basil.
You drain the tomatoes?
No.
No. So there are juices in there too?
Yeah.
So really it's kind of like the tuna's sort of half curing with the juice and the salt.
It's awesome.
It sounds great. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Brian in Baltimore. Brian, how are you?
Hi, Brian.
Hey, good afternoon. I have a low heat cherry tomato dish, and it comes from my garden, of which I only have two things, which are cherry tomatoes and basil leaves.
All right.
Sounds like you have your priorities straight.
Thank you very much. So I cut the cherry tomatoes up, put them in a bowl, cut up fresh basil leaves. Then I use a can of wild albacore tuna and water. Then I put extra virgin olive oil on top of it. Mm-hmm. Then I chop up some red onion. Then I put spaghetti in it.
Oh, wow.
So that's the only thing that I heat.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
I'm presuming that you cooked and cooled the spaghetti?
I put it in at the last minute because I put a few pats of butter in there and I want them to melt.
Sure. Oh, that sounds good.
And sometimes I put Parmesan cheese. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I put some Kalamata olives.
Yum.
salt and pepper. And then I squeeze a half a lemon on top of it.
There you go. That sounds good. That's great.
Thank you.
Good recipe, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you. I enjoy doing recipes now and then.
So what kind of cherry tomatoes do you have, or do you just have like regular cherry tomatoes in your garden?
You know, I really don't know, Cindy. I should probably pay attention.
No, you don't need to.
You can plant. I mean, as long as you like eating them,
that's all that matters.
You can be a wild man next year and plant like three varieties with different colors.
Hey, I think I'm going to try that. But I've tried plum tomatoes, and it's not the same.
Okay.
I've tried regular tomatoes, and it's not the same.
Got it.
I'm thinking of maybe putting some anchovies in it to see what it's like.
To do cherry tomatoes, anchovies, olives, and a little bit of raw garlic and olive oil.
That sounds so good.
That's a very like typical Calabrian seacoast antipasti. That with the bruschetta, you know, just grill pieces of bread and then put that little relish on there.
Wow,
that's a very very typical Calabrian thing, and I'm going to want to eat that.
We're getting hungry.
Yeah,
here.
That's.
And I sometimes put some sriracha in it.
Okay.
To beef it up.
A little spice.
I will. If you like something a little spicy, go online and find yourself Calabrian chilies preserved on oil.
Yes. Okay.
There's a pretty inexpensive supplier that's been at it since the '60s, called Tutto Calabria.
Tutto Calabria.
Tutto. T-U-T-T-O, Calabria, like the region. And you can get the whole Calabrian chilies preserved in oil. They have the best flavor. They have enough heat to make you pay attention, not so much to make you cry.
That's about the style that I like.
And the oil they're preserved
in. No need for torture.
Yeah, the oil they're preserved in, you can just drizzle a little bit out, use it, and then fill back in with a little bit of extra virgin. And it'll keep, as you hang on to those chilies, it'll keep kind of making your own oil as you go.
Excellent. Wow, that sounds good. I'll have to check it out.
All right.
Hey,
thanks,
good
Brian.
Afternoon.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks. Hey, take care, Cindy. Bye.
Well, we've got a bunch of emails. You can reach us, ForemanWolf@WIPR.org, or call us, 410-662-8780. Or, in fact, you can get us on Instagram, at Charleston Restaurant. We get interesting messages at times.
And I have some of those Calabrian chilies in my walk-in right now.
Yeah,
we just started working with them, they're really very, very
good.
You
really don't listen, do you?
Oh, stop. Jeez.
I've been talking about them for like 15 years.
Well, you know.
Oh, my
It's a southern restaurant.
God.
It's a southern American restaurant.
It's a hard-headed restaurant. Hard-headed people. All right. We have one from Kate in Medfield.
Hard-headed people? Did you
I would
say
never
that?
Say that. I'm so glad you're all talking tomatoes today.
Me too.
I got super excited at the market and bought way too many,
yes,
so I'm thinking of making
good
Italian-style tomato sauce. I'm sort of afraid of canning and was wondering if it's okay to freeze
too
it. And by the way, do you have any tips or recipes for marinara? What I would say, you tomatoes, fresh tomato basil sauce and marinara are two very different things. And so it really depends on the tomatoes that you bought. If you bought plum tomatoes, or really meaty, thick-skinned tomatoes, that's going to make great fresh tomato basil sauce. And it's really not that scary to can it. The guys that make the jars, ball jars, you can go online and order their book and,
yes,
you know, and get it like
I have that
in
book
2 hours or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that will tell you what you need to know how to do it safely. So don't be totally scared. And I guarantee you at some point you will boil the jars and one of them will blow up in the water and it's going to be okay. You're just going to have to clean out the pot. It's going to be a mess.
Yeah.
It just tells you that you need to do a better job sealing it correctly before it goes in there. Mm. But the tomato basil sauce, I mean, it's a pretty easy, you need to lose the skins on the aromas. One of the easiest ways to do that is if you have a cheese grater. You can very simply, over a bowl, use the cheese grater, split that Roma tomato in half and grate it. You'll end up with the seeds. I don't think the seeds bother anybody. The skins on those tomatoes are too much, though. You end up with the flesh and the juice and the seeds in that bowl. Get that at the same time as you've done that, let that sit for a little bit with some extra virgin olive oil. Not a ton, just enough to season it and toss it around. No salt. In a pot, very low heat, a little bit of raw garlic, a little bit of raw onion, not a ton of either one, a little bit of celery, a little bit of carrot if you want it, but very, very small. Brunoise is the cut that you want. Or you honest, or again, if you want to make your life really easy and you don't have significant white knife skills, you could use a grater or something for that. Mm-hmm. You just want very small of those things so they become inconsequential in the sauce. Don't throw the basil in right from the beginning. Once you have that just working in canola oil at very low heat and like a big iron pot that's lined in ceramic is something that's good, whether it's like a stove or something like that. Then you can get your tomatoes in there, reduce that juice by about half in volume, and stir it a decent amount. Let it cool, season it with salt and pepper, plenty of fresh basil, and let that steep for a little bit, maybe like an hour or something like that. Then, and then you'll jar it up, and then you'll preserve it, and just follow the steps in the book, and you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, marinara is an easy recipe to find, but that I wouldn't monkey with the fresh tomato. The main thing is to cook off enough water so you don't end up with a jar of water when you go to open the sauce in February.
And you could mondeer the tomatoes to remove the skin as well. So you put just a tiny little cross on the opposite of the stem end and use the point of a paring knife or a little X and bring a big pot of water up to a boil. You don't have to have anything in there but water. And drop your tomatoes in for, it's usually 10, 15 seconds. Have ice bath ready to go. Pull them out because you don't want to cook them. You just want to get them hot enough that you can remove the skins. And so use a skimmer or something to remove the tomatoes. Pop them into the ice water. And once they're cool, which should only take, a couple minutes, you should be able to use that same paring knife to just easily remove that skin. And you can cut the stem out and then you can just make your sauce from there. And you could also cut them in half and squeeze the seeds out if you don't want the seeds in your sauce. But I don't think there's really anything wrong with seeds. And you don't want to lose that juice, I don't think, so much. So
no, and I've never minded them in a tomato sauce. If you're making puree, that's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're making paste, that's a different thing.
Yeah, I think one of the things, too, about making marinara is that, the way it's funny because you don't think of a tomato sauce as being French, but of course, tomato sauce is one of the mother sauces, so it is a French sauce as well as Italian and probably every other country makes makes tomato sauce. We put a little bit of fat back in when we make tomato sauce, so that is not Italian, obviously, but it's awfully good. So if you want to add a little bit of pork product or bacon or fat back,
I'm sure the people are shocked to hear that you add fat back to your tomato sauce. True story. In the first restaurant we opened.
And then I finished the sauce with butter, Tony. Want you to know this.
Oh, I know.
I finish it with cold butter right before I serve it, and it makes one of the most delicious tomato sauces you'll ever eat in your life. And a little bit of extra virgin olive oil.
She's become much more restrained over the years, but true story. First restaurant we opened, we had an employee taking one of the food tests, and we asked him what the three key elements were to Cindy's cooking. And he said,
"We did
pork, pork, and more pork." True story. You've become much more refined over the years.
I remember that.
So when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we've got emails to read. We're looking for your calls, 410-662-8780. We're talking tomatoes on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. We're taking your calls about tomatoes, needs for tomatoes, recipes. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear a tomato disaster if someone's got one they can share with us.
Mm-hmm.
It's 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org or send us something on Instagram at Charleston Restaurant.
Or like, what was your first tomato? When did you first have tomatoes? Like, what's your childhood story? I'd like to hear that. Yeah,
Yeah.
Did you like them?
How were they made? Apropos to that, I have an email from Edith Odenton.
Mm-hmm.
Tomato season always reminds me of my grandma. She was the toughest and sweetest little Southern Maryland angel. She and her brother had a farm, and tomatoes were her favorite. She would pick the prettiest two tomatoes out of her harvest, and her and I would sit on the porch, listen to bluegrass, drink her homemade sweet tea, and eat our tomatoes like apples with just a pinch of salt on each bite.
Yum.
Whenever I have a delicious tomato, I'll think of her.
That's nice.
That's
I love that.
Incredibly
That's
sweet.
That's beautiful that I have that whole vision in my mind right now.
Do you like bluegrass?
Willis from Waverly.
Oh, yeah, we have a message from Willis and Waverly. I never liked tomatoes growing up, and it was really only in the last few years, eating ripe, juicy local tomatoes, that I realized that I just didn't like the pink and gray ones. We got an LOL from Willis. That's great. Thanks,
I can
Willis.
Understand not liking the pink and gray ones.
Gosh.
Y'all were tortured as children, apparently, with tomatoes.
No.
I have to say, BLT is the sandwich that I like, Tony. See, you always say I don't like sandwiches. My mom must love BLTs because when I was a little girl, that was a sandwich my mom and I would snack on for lunch.
Do you eat the crusts?
Yes, my mom doesn't let you not eat something.
Okay, there we go.
You have to eat everything.
There we go.
Yeah, that's the rule.
Thank you, Mother Wolf, for that.
Yes.
Someone can tell you what to do.
We weren't allowed to have cherries, maraschino cherries, when I was a little girl. They were
any other food
apparently
rules?
Very dangerous to eat.
In case you got a pit, you're going to grow a cherry pea in your stomach?
No, I think it was that red dye thing when we were kids. They threatened that, you know, it was a problem. So what do you, if you were to serve one of these dishes with these tomatoes, is it going to foul up the wine? Or is it going to be good for wine?
Tomatoes and wine are kind of tricky. I'll tell you, a pretty good default. Mm-hmm. If you have a tomato dominated dish, rosés from the south of France, made largely from Grenache and Mourvèdre, and also some from Spain, they do really well.
Good, okay.
They do really well, and there's also a rosé from like Tavel or just Côte de Provence or you know and any of these bottlings.
Mm-hmm.
There's rosé in from one place in particular in Italy, in Abruzzo. That's called the Cerasuolo. That rosé has big body. It's made from Montepulciano, is the grape. And it's a little bit richer, spicier than some of those very clean rosés from the south of France. But that's a good default in a tomato situation. The main thing with wine and food, when food has good acidity, like tomato brings, you have to have wine that has acidity. One reason that Italian wine often works well is because a lot of Italian red wines have good acidity.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find ones that are not that tannic and that have, you know, that are appropriate in body and flavor for the dish, but they'll have the acid to match the tomato to deal with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the things that even if you're like in Piemonte in the northwest of Italy and you're not going to get just like a fresh tomato basil sauce very often, but you will get a ragu or meat sauce, even that, especially in season, you're going to have it finished with a pretty good amount of tomato.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to mean that acidity is there. One of the reasons why so many of the red wines there work well, you know, ranging from that to like the lamb or the beef that you get in that region, that's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
So
good. Interesting. Cool. Mm-hmm.
You ever had a wine and tomato problem?
No, I don't think so.
Things I would not drink with tomato dominated dish are two really popular things: Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it: vanilla and tomato.
No, yuck.
A Cabernet Sauvignon. Think about it. Black currants, you know, mm-hmm. vanilla, chocolate, cocoa, cherries, tomato.
Not working.
It's all a little strange.
I like the rosé thing.
It goes together as well as whipped cream and ketchup.
What do you think about rosé champagne? Would that work with tomatoes, or is champagne sort of
I think champagne
weird?
Always works for you.
Uh-huh.
It depends on the composition of the dish.
Uh-huh.
You know, if tomato's an accent, sure. If it's dominating, I don't think that the acidity matches up. It'll end up dominating the finish of the champagne, which is a little bit of a shame. Because
mm-hmm.
you're going to be spending some money. We've got an email from Deb. Hi, Deb. Love your show today, she says. And I'm having a special tomato tart that I made with Heritage tomatoes. That's a nice thing to call heirloom tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I used puff pastry, then spread a mix of homemade ricotta cheese and goat cheese over the pastry, followed by sautéed red onions and garlic, then topped it with slices of tomatoes, served with fresh basil.
Nice.
Yeah, that sounds like a very lavish sort of slice of
That's
pizza,
fun.
Deb. I like
right?
that.
Right, and I like the idea of the puff pastry being nice and crunchy and flaky and pretty and yum.
Have you ever made
love ricotta.
Have you ever made the Provençal version sort of pizza called pizza ladière?
No, I haven't. You know, we talked about making it for one of the restaurants when we first opened, and I think we probably did do it for a little while, so maybe I made it back then, but I love pizza ladière. Mm-hmm. And the thing too is that the way that they garnish it with the olives and the what is it? Peppers, yeah. Typically. You know, I can see the checkerboard pattern.
Well,
right
a lot
now.
Of times it's anchovies. I mean, one of the one. This
oh,
is
anchovies.
Imagine something that's like the size of a cookie sheet
mm-hmm.
That was covered. That they will cover it in cheese. Usually, it's like fresh cheese, like farmer cheese or goat cheese or something that's been seasoned.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes with herbs, sometimes with chili, sometimes with the juice from tomatoes and things like that, or it could just be lemon. But that's spread out. Fresh tomatoes are sometimes a garnish. Lots of herbs are. Olives are almost always a garnish. Little Niçoise olives or the Niort olives, or even the oil-cured guys.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see on there. You'll see a crosshatch of anchovies, sort of looking like a parquet floor on top of the on top of the pizza ladière. But that's a It's a street food sort of thing that you would get
I've
in
certainly
a lot
eaten
of towns.
Plenty of it. Oh, my goodness.
Like you're
so
hungry
good.
And you're walking through Avignon and you're hungry.
That's
and,
where it was, Avignon.
You know, you can mm-hmm. walk up to a stand and
that's fun.
Get a slice.
And just, it's so like good. So good.
Just a different slice from like going to Philly.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay.
So, you know, the strangest thing with tomato and wine is with older wines, almost no matter what, it rarely doesn't work well. It rarely works well, I should say. If you're holding something that you cherish, a bottle of 1997 Chianti Classico or something, even though Sangiovese and even mellowed Sangiovese like that will work nicely usually with tomatoes, if it's tomato dominated, what happens to the sort of leathery flavors of the Sangiovese gets very weird with tomato dominated stuff.
It's just good to know.
So let's take a call from George in Towson. George, how are you?
Hi, Tony and Cindy. I know you guys are talking about tomatoes, but we have a bumper crop of cukes. But I'm wondering if
good
you can
you.
Help me out. Now, we make salad out of the cucumbers,
mm-hmm.
and we do that, and we put cukes in salad and stuff. But I'm wondering if you have anything extra that might help us get rid of these buggers.
Do you make pickles?
I do. I pickle, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, you especially these are the big guys. You don't have to do, just little pickling cucumbers. The individual guys, you can do slices,
mm-hmm. chunks,
and you can do, custom versions of your pickling recipe. You can do a couple different kinds.
Yeah, sweet or tart.
What else can you put in the brine that's interesting?
Those Calabrian chilies I was talking about, if you want something spicy pickles are really good.
Heat-wise, are they super hot? Or?
They're pretty hot. They're pretty hot.
I would say they're mildly spicy.
Uh-huh. They're pretty hot. It depends on, it depends on what you think of as hot.
Maybe,
but to me, they're very spicy.
Yeah, maybe our caller from earlier, Nate, he could use some cucumbers to garnish the gazpacho he's making for 80 people
there
for his husband's birthday.
Well, and also,
he should come to my house.
You could give him 80 cucumbers, I bet. So, have you ever made cucumber soup?
No, but obviously that can't be hot. That's a cold soup, correct?
Ooh.
Well, it can be hot, but you absolutely can make it hot. But I prefer it this time of the year to be cold. And what I like to do is puree cucumbers in the. I mean, you don't have to cook anything. That's the fun part. You puree the cucumbers in the food processor with some avocado, fresh lime juice, a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, and salt and pepper, and it makes a great. And if you have some chicken stock, you could add a little bit of chicken stock to thin it out a bit, or just a tiny bit of water to thin it out to get it to the right consistency, because the avocado will thicken the soup. And I would peel the cucumber, cut them into like a large pieces and salt them before, lightly salt them before, which will also bring out the moisture, which you want for the soup. So, yeah. And so, yeah, it's quick, it's easy, or you could blend it. If you want it to have some texture, do it in the food processor. If you want it to be perfectly smooth and gorgeous, do it in the blender. So it just depends on what you want, but I love cucumber soup.
The other thing I would throw in there for you, George, if you're using your grill and you're grilling stuff, you're throwing lamb chops on the grill, or you're putting chicken on the grill, or whatever it might be. Especially if you season it in any way that's a little bit spicy, make yourself some raita, or just very simply cucumbers mixed with Greek yogurt, cucumbers cut very fine, or into really fine julienne or something. With a good quantity of Greek yogurt, lemon juice, a little bit of fresh dill, a little bit of shallot if you have it, and let that sit for even just a little bit. That's a great garnish for something coming off the grill. It's a condiment for grilled food.
And you could grill some cucumbers just for fun too. I mean, since you have so many,
grilled cucumber.
I love grilled cucumber.
Fat pieces of cucumber grilled with fresh basil on little sandwiches.
Yeah, just
sort of like He-Man tea sandwiches.
Yeah, salt it.
Mm. All of that sounds wonderful.
Good. Well, thanks, George.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Sure. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
It's got me thinking about cucumbers.
I love cucumber sandwiches.
About,
my mom used to make those too.
Instead of a BLT, doing a BLC with cucumber, or BLCA with cucumber and avocado.
Mm-hmm. And tomato. You can put tomato on there
you
too.
You keep stacking way too many things. You did that to the Benedict. It was too much. What's the best dish that you have had with tomatoes that you did not make?
Oh, a guy Savoie in Paris.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. He had that was the first time I ever had a tomato ice. That's where I first had it. Oh my gosh. And it was so beautiful. And he had these tomatoes. Everything was just perfection. You know, five different types of tomatoes. One was in a tart. So that's interesting because two of the listeners have talked about tarts. And it was a puff pastry tart. And it was formed into a timbale mold. And all the tomatoes were inside. So it was baked together. Oh my gosh. It had goat cheese in it. And that was one part of the dish with the ice. And then these wonderful tomatoes on the plate, and I can't remember what else was on there, but it was incredible.
Were they singing tomato songs when they were delivering it?
They should have been, because it was one of the best things ever.
Yeah. Next time on Farmer Wolf would be tomato songs. Well, thanks for listening today. Regardless, you can reach us via email, foremanwolf@wipr.org, with other questions or comments. You can listen to this again, if you're fascinated, or any one of our other programs from the WYPR website, WYPR.org. Look for the Foreman Wolf page, and there's a full menu of episodes there. To follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf and on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
My Instagram is The Real Tony Foreman. Thanks so much for listening.
Happy Sunday. Mm-hmm.